I'm Zena.
And I'm Renee.
Welcome to When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, a podcast dedicated to making wine drinking more approachable and inclusive. Join us as we decode the language and unlock the customs of wine drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, we've got the bottle ready.
The bottle's almost gone.
Oh, no, I know. It's sad. But
whatever happened to it? I think there's a hole in these glasses.
We drank it all. All right. Here we go. Welcome to this episode of When You Just Want a Glass of Wine.
Cheers. Before the official toast.
Cheers. So this episode we have titled, Renee loves it when I come up with these really long titles.
Because I have to type them in.
Hosting Uncorked, Parties, Places, and a Camper Named Lemon Twist with our friend Jerry. Hey. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. So we are here with Jerry Buchholz. She is from Minnesota, another Midwest woman here.
Midwest rules. It's a great place to be from.
Yes, exactly.
And drink from. Then from the Midwest, she was a showgirl and then lived a very exotic life in Italy at the U.S. mission to the United Nations agencies in Rome and lots of other words after that, but we'll talk more about that after. Then she came up to the DMV and lived up in Silver Spring, where I met her when she was Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA, and talk about the world's best retirement party, which we will talk about. I still have the pictures to this day. Then she went up to Newport, Rhode Island, where I visited many a time, and then down to Orange, Virginia, which is how I actually met Luca and the gang at Barbersville. And now she is on her way to getting a camper named Lemon Twist. So in honor of that, I have come up with a little toast. Are we all ready?
Yeah.
All ready.
Today, we sip to Solo Tables, Open Hatches, and the friends we haven't met yet. Raise a glass to Jerry, to journeys, and to saying yes.
Cheers. Oh, I love it. I love
Thank
that.
Thank you.
All right. So.
I'm always like, you have to drink or it's bad luck.
Before we get started, Renee, tell everybody how to follow us.
You can follow us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast, RSS. Go to the website, whenyoujustwantaglassofwine.com. Go to Instagram at whenyoujustwantaglassofwine. Facebook, When You Just Want a Glass of Wine.
It's really easy.
Find us, you know, track us down. Come to Beauty, Champagne and Sugar Boutique. We're frequently podcasting from there, which we are right now.
Right now, with a bottle of wine.
With a bottle of wine.
And Jerry, before we get a little bit further into you, how would you like people to find you on Instagram and everywhere?
Well, I am currently using a Camping Solo over 60 handle everywhere that I can use such words. And the focus of that is the idea that women, well, everyone actually, that true adventure in life really begins after you're 60 and you've launched your family, you've wrapped your career up and tied it up with a fancy bow, and you're ready to really focus on self-reflection and what makes you happy and what makes you. And I have a good friend named Marty, and I will say something or do something, and she looks at me and says, oh, that's just so Jerry. You're the Jerriest.
The Jerriest.
Yes.
Marty is pretty funny.
I love it.
So that is what I'm really focusing on. I had, camped my whole life as a child with my family. I spent 2 years in the Peace Corps in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, lived without electricity and running water for 2 years. I was a scoutmaster with the Boy Scouts of America when my son was young. And so I have had I've had many exotic adventures on top of all of that. So this is something that's just very much a part of who I am as a person, and I decided that I can't be the only person who has this dream of traveling full time, of going wherever you feel like pointing your car and toting along a super comfy bed and a little kitchenette with you as you go.
I mean, we were sitting at her house over in Orange, and I said, do you have an Instagram about this? I was like, look at these cool things you can do. And as we're drinking coffee, because Jerry, as we will discuss in a couple minutes, is the best hostess in the world. As we're drinking our coffee and teacups sitting out there, and Kachu the dog is running around, and we're chit-chatting because she also can multitask like no other. And she's like, I've got my Instagram ready, and I did my first post, and I'm like, I haven't finished my first cup of coffee yet. So she is.
It's true. I did it on the fly while we were sitting on the porch, and you said, "Oh, you need to have an Instagram it before you could even say."
I feel like
that's a good idea.
You're a trigger puller.
Like, oh, always.
See, right here.
Without question.
Come on.
Yes. Always. That's. I think that's your Midwest. Well, we
it is a very Midwestern thing. Like, I always said, like, you know, there's a lot of people running around screaming that the ship is sinking. The other people bailed it. And water. So Midwesterners bail the water.
You bail the water.
Let's pull the trigger and get this movie going.
I drink
or
the
jump
wine.
Off the ship, build a new boat, and invite everyone to come along.
Exactly.
I'm the people drinking the last bit of wine. Speaking of, Renee, also, before we get a little bit deeper, tell us what we're drinking after what's in
Renee's
glass.
Well, it's a perfect
glass.
Orange segue because this is Michael Schaap's 2022 Roussanne from the Honalee Vineyard. Monticello is right near Orange. As Jerry said, she's driven by it many times. This was a dumper because Roussanne is typically a blending grape, and I was honest to God on the way over here listening to a podcast about Roussanne and the various like Roussanne and Marsanne. I'm like,
now you know,
but it's a gorgeous wine. I was like, this is an oak. It's like it's not oak,
pure, no leaves. It's just beautiful,
as we say in the WS. I think it is a pure varietal expression.
Absolutely,
this is the grape. This is everything magical about this grape. But you can see like all the different elements that it could add to. A blend of Chenin and Semillon and all these other things, what it brings to it. It's a gorgeous grape, and that's what we're drinking now.
And
which
we're
is
almost
perfect.
Done with it, which makes me sad, but we will.
But we're wrapping up Virginia Wine Month, which has been a great month. And shout out to Zena and Beauty for being named a Virginia Wine Steward.
Thank you.
Rightfully so. Like, well deserved honor.
Thank you.
Let's go.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Jerry. So, from Bollywood Party, oh, that was a good one, to the Titanic, which is her themes, not the actual ship. Jerry's parties, I started with, you got to say it with me, legendary. I mean, they were spectacular. Also, the people that came to them were pretty legendary as well. And then she moved to the ultimate party town, Newport, Rhode Island. And when I say this woman did everything, we were sitting there wearing, wasn't it Mary's hat I took or the hat where we were watching the polo, and then we did the Asada afterwards, which was amazing. We did the Bolshoi Ballet. And that was after she and I had met in the D.C. area. But after Newport, that was her next kind of reincarnation, and she settled in Orange, Virginia, made herself a regular over at Barbersville. Say hi to Luca for us.
Hello, Luca.
And then recently sold everything, including her house, kept the dog, Kachu, and her wine key, and moved forward in her camper. So we met when I owned my restaurants up in Silver Spring, and Jerry kind of wandered her way in, and she started it with, my New Year's resolution was to drink a glass of sparkling or champagne, because we didn't have much champagne there. We had sparkling.
I described it as drink champagne every Sunday,
yes.
But in fact, it was sparkling.
Whatever was sparkling. And she sat at the bar, and from that, we became the dearest of friends. We have been, just the two of us, to Sweden together, to Vegas together. We traveled with a group to Iceland together. I know I've been out to see you several times. So we're going to start with a story that I love, and it actually begins with Jerry's travel curse.
Ooh.
But it involves the Soyuz rocket, her running through the airport, throwing away her suitcase, and then drinking Prosecco in Kazakhstan. And I believe this is going to be the story.
I love
that
everything
keeps
about this story already.
Listening.
And
yes.
Yeah, like,
now, that
go.
Time it actually was champagne. In Russia, it's always champagne.
I should have known that. So tell us this story, because, I mean, really, this woman had the power to make the Soyuz rocket leave just a little bit later than it was supposed to.
So that part isn't true, but let's believe it anyway. So I was so fortunate when I was the Chief Human Capital Officer of NASA, and really the steward for the NASA workforce, which is, you know, some of the smartest people in the known universe. And I got an invitation to attend the Soyuz launch in Kazakhstan. And so I had a person responsible for me. All my travel arrangements were made for me, and we got to the airport. No airplane.
Wait, were you in? Where were you here? Dulles.
In Dulles. We were at Dulles. Okay. No airplane, and the airplane had not left Moscow. So we.
This is not abnormal for Jerry.
This is not abnormal for me. This is totally normal, and I always warn everybody.
Oh, and I can attest to it.
Oh,
this
no,
is
Dina
why
has been with me.
Just so we know, this is why I have a Vegvizier. Which is
tattooed
an Iceland compass tattooed on my back. and just because of Jerry.
Yeah. So the person who I was traveling with, who was my travel expediter, she gets on her computer and she finds some off-brand Russian airline. I mean, I don't even remember what
Sounds
the name of this.
Totally safe.
And
not so at all irradiated.
I sleep on the floor of Dulles. We get up, we hop on a plane.
It was like 22 hours was the whole trip, or is that just the beginning?
No, 22 hours before we took off.
Yeah, I've had that experience at Dulles before, but more recently.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So she turns to me and she says, the only way this is going to work is if we dump all our luggage. I'm like, great, let's dump all our luggage.
Did you believe this?
So I
do, and I love it.
I go to the ladies' room. I, you know, pack the bare minimum that I could fit in my, you know, handbag. and I give my suitcase to the lady who's cleaning the bathroom. Oh, so we hop on a plane. We get to New York. And, you know, I'm like, you know, following her lead. So she walks up to the counter of this obscure no-name airline and slaps down her government passport. So I slap down my passport right next to her, and she says, we are NASA employees on our way to the Soyuz launch, and we can only get there in time if you let us get on this airplane. And they took one look at her and one look at me and said, ladies, please board the aircraft. So
that's some power right there.
So we
say it with authority, people.
We fly. Yeah, I drink as much as I can on that airplane.
I mean, fair.
Because by now,
I'm assuming there was vodka more than good wine. If it was a Russian,
I think by this time I had been traveling almost 40 hours, right? With only having slept on the airport floor. And let's face it, I'm not exactly youthful. So we get off the airplane, and as we get off the jetway, there's this woman standing there with a sign that has my name on it. And she looks at me and she says, run, madam, run. Because the only way to get from Moscow to Baikonur is by charter. And the charter is taking off in like less than 15 minutes.
Run, madam.
So my expediter and I are literally...
There's nothing like a Russian accent to put you like, you're like, run, madam, run.
So running through
without your luggage, so it's easier.
Yes, we didn't have any luggage, so it was easier. We get there, and then of course there's security, so I gotta take off my belt, and I've got, you know, all this other stuff. So we go through this, we run out onto the tarmac. The last of the people are climbing up the stairs, you know, to the airplane. I get in the airplane, I flop down in my seat, and one of the other NASA executives is sitting on the aisle across from me, and he looks at me and very dryly says, so I hear you had a hard time.
Oh. I take it he did not.
No, he was being funny. Oh. So, yeah, so that was my tale of, and then we landed in Baikonur and all was well.
And you did have champagne.
Champagne.
I did make sure that I put some in my 3-ounce in a 3-ounce bottle with my shampoo.
This and woman that I did plans not, ahead.
I did not dump that at the airport. I made sure I took that with me.
See, this is why we're friends. I told you.
Yeah, I feel like we should just be best friends already because I love, there's so much about, we're going to talk about it throughout the thing, but one of the things that I love, in that instance, you've got somebody at least traveling with you, but I love the whole idea of like the solo because we'll talk about that later, of like opportunities missed waiting for other people to commit to things when you're like, I'm never going to do that again. And the world that opens up to you when it's okay, and I think we do have, it's a very Midwestern thing of like being able to sit at a bar by yourself and be like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? What are you doing? Like, what's your day? Like, what's going on with this? What's the best thing to have here? It's that Midwest nice, thing that we start talking to people.
Well, there is a trick to bars and bartenders.
Yes, let's talk about that because we do have that on the agenda.
Oh,
because
okay.
Jerry is, you know what I love going, when you go with Jerry, and you know, I'm a barfly myself, comes from my father, and I love it, but Jerry walks in, and even when we're in the, what I consider one of the most expensive restaurants in Newport, she knows how to get the charcuterie platter that is the size of a dining room table for like, I don't know, $25. It was so fabulous. They stopped serving it because she knows all the bartenders and she's like, I got this. You get the largest martinis, you get the best service because she knows how to make friends with a bartender.
So, you know, after having spent some time, you know, really watching what happens places. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I call this watching the wildlife in its natural habitat. Yeah. So you go in, and it is my observation that if you want to engage with other people and you want to chat, the place to sit is at the corner of the bar.
Yes.
There's like an unspoken rule that if you're sitting at the corner, you're interested in engaging with your fellow travelers.
Well, that's some nice life advice right there. I love that.
If you want to like have some quiet time, read your book, do whatever, you know, and be truly solo, you sit at the long straight part.
Right.
Wow.
Because you're torn towards people if you're sitting at the corner.
That's correct. If you
it's
want,
funny. I always sit at the corner, and I, even as a restaurant person,
well,
I really
you're
realize
very
that
extroverted.
I'm the introverted extrovert.
That's
yes.
what I am too. But yes, if you want to become a regular at a bar, it's very important to sit where the bartender makes the drinks, like right in front of where the bartender
service bar,
and be a super nice, supportive.
Not in front of the service bar, mind you.
Yes,
that's upsetting to them.
Near.
Yeah. So it's and engage that person and really talk to them about their craft, because a really, really good bartender has technique, knows a lot about liquor, has favorite liquors and liqueurs that they like to use.
Absolutely.
And almost no one ever asks them about their artistry.
So, also recognize when they're super busy and don't do that.
Go off, go midweek.
Not when they're slammed brunch.
Absolutely.
And you want to ask them
not.
About high-end cocktails when they're making 27 mimosas.
Yeah, and never, ever order anything that needs a blender.
No. And in fact, to my observation, most bars don't even have blenders.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not the kind we go to.
So there's an art to it. And actually, I don't consider myself a master of this. My friend Marty is a master. And what I have learned from her and from watching her in these situations.
She is fabulous. Just to be clear, the women friends that Jerry has, they are what we will repeat the stories throughout are all fabulous.
So I'm lucky.
It's a good tribe. It's good to have a good tribe.
Well, let's start with your aha moment in wine.
Oh, gosh. So I think I started drinking wine, as most young women do, as sort of an afterthought. Not really. I remember my first glass of wine ever.
Was it something fruity in the Midwest, or am
it
I just being horrible?
It was pink Chablis.
Pink Chablis?
Yeah.
Oh, so Jerry's going to love the story that we'll talk about later, if you're all listening right now, to the pink Chardonnay we're talking about. But yes, that is becoming
a new
varietal for champagne.
Except that for champagne is pink
so,
Chardonnay.
So, you know, Chablis is... Actually,
Chardonnay.
But your pink Chardonnay, was that,
Chablis.
I'm sorry, pink Chablis, was that the color of the wine? Was it pink? Was
yes,
it orange?
Yes, it was pink.
So was it more like a white zinish type of thing then, or what was that like?
I didn't know. I mean, it was my first glass of wine. I didn't know anything. I have no point of comparison. But what happened was my friend Jo Gunderson and her sister Jan Gunderson, her parents were out of town.
So Minnesota Midwest.
Right. Her mother had gotten a crepe pan for Christmas.
Oh my God, I have my mother's 1970s crepe pan.
So, nice.
So her parents went out of town and they invited us over and made crepes. So it was crepes with sour cream filling and strawberries, and they raided their parents' liquor cabinet and pulled out a bottle of pink Chablis and poured the pink Chablis around. You know, one bottle for probably, I don't know, there were maybe 10 girls. So it wasn't a drunken, boozy thing. But here I was having my first glass of wine with my closest friends.
And crepes.
With crepes.
Right.
How sophisticated.
Sounds a little like Blintzes, to be honest. But.
And I grew up in a really, really small town in Minnesota. This was swanky.
Yeah.
So.
I feel you.
It was fun.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, so what was the bigger aha moment? I mean, was it in Italy?
I lived in Italy for 3 years, and that's when I moved beyond grocery store wine.
Okay.
And I was 30, 31 or so, and...
basically a newborn, Kenny, right?
Yeah, a small child, 10 months old. My husband was working at the U.S. Mission to the United Nations agencies in Rome. And that's when I really got introduced to really robust red wine, which I had never drunk before.
That's the place to do it, right?
The idea of wine and food pairing and going together, an appreciation for house wines. Like, we would drive out to the country, you know, to a tiny little town, go to whatever restaurant there was in that town, and just order the house wine, which, you know, came from grapes that were grown.
And those little glasses, too? Like, not a big wine glass? Were they in those little, like, water glasses?
Well, they always had smaller glasses than we do here in America. Yeah. But the wine would come out, you know, in big carafes.
Right.
Or jugs. So that's kind of when I really started focusing more on, you know, labels and understanding what the labels meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when I developed a love of Barolo and black chicken Chianti and some of those other wines.
Yeah. Renee, tell our little audience here about what the Black Rooster on the Chianti is.
Oh, I'm going to have the two regions. Okay, so there were two regions that were both fighting for primacy on who made the best wines, who had came up with it first. So they said, we'll come up with a thing. It was two different regions up there, and they were like, we're going to come up with this competition, and we're going to send...
It's a great story.
...roosters, and which rooster or which chicken got there first, covered the most ground. So one of the regions was like, we're going to send the fattest chickens because they'll just, like, they won't need to stop for anything. They'll just keep going. And the other said, like, the skittiest and whatever. The Black Rooster won. And that's when that became on the label of the entire region. So Chianti is now, like, that's the Black Rooster. It's a apocryphal story that they talk about. But, yeah, it's literally like chickens racing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you know.
And it was good because I'm like, because Italy is going to Italy.
Yes.
And I thought they were going to break me on the tasting because I'm like, not only do they have, like, regulations that are so unlike any of the regulations, they can also just change the names of things.
It's so complicated.
Like, you would never expect a Grand Cru in Bordeaux to say, you know, we didn't have a very good season this year, so we're going to step down from Grand Cru for this year to do this. But they can do that in Italy, like, automatically, and it works for them. They're very fluid in it. It's great. Yeah. And so those are great wines. And food pairing and the locality of it, I love all of that, of like finding wine as a sense of place, and that it's not a thing that you go out for a sophisticated drink. It's like wine is part of their culture. Wine is part of their life.
And you've always felt that, Jerry, that wine and food go hand in hand.
Wine and food go hand in hand. And I'm not opposed to sitting down and drinking a bottle of wine just to drink a bottle of wine. But for me, wine is really about experience. Yeah. It's not a beverage. If you want a beverage, drink water or Diet Coke. But if you want to have an experience, open up a bottle of wine and share it with a friend, maybe with some food, and you will have a wonderful, memorable experience.
I think one of your best Instagram postings was when you and Mary were in the Cinque Terre, and you had that, once again, I'm apparently fascinated by charcuterie boards, and you had this charcuterie board.
It was unbelievable.
It was right, and were you drinking wine, or were you drinking an Aperol?
Oh, we were drinking wine.
You had this picture where you went to all five of them, didn't you walk through the whole?
We went to all five. You couldn't walk from place to place because there had been some landslides, but wherever you could walk from town to town, we did do that.
And I was so jealous. I was like stalking these pictures, and there's this beautiful food and this beautiful wine, and it's where you were there, which is also a very touristy area. Did you find the wine to be overpriced, or even there, was it still reasonable?
Wine is never overpriced. I love Italy. That. I mean, certainly not by our American standards. True. And also, if you're drinking local, which I'm always a fan of doing.
Yes.
But you're right about that charcuterie board. It was specially cut to fit the tabletop. So it was...
I'll have to show you this picture. It's amazing.
It was
amazing.
The whole tabletop. And it was... The table was easily 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet. So I don't need, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was one of the best pictures she's posted in the years.
It's, you know,
I've known
almost
her.
10 square feet of charcuterie.
And you were just, it was absolutely so beautiful. Well, Jerry, you have been doing all of these events, but, and I just, she always has a way of saying things. So you were the federal by day and hostess by night. Mm-hmm. And Jerry had this way of well, how many years in a row did you win Best Place to Work? Five every year you were there?
I mean, I think I won three or four times, and then it continued on, well, has continued ever since. So I've been retired 10 years. So, you know, they've been best place to work for 12 or 14 years, really? Something like that. That's but the first time was...
I'm going to give you all that credit. And one of the favorite things that, you know, I very rarely curse on this podcast, but one of the favorite things, and tell me if I say it wrong, that Jerry told me she would say is, does this memo make my ass look fat?
I was but. It was
but. Sorry, see, I didn't curse it. Policy. Policy, that's what it was.
Just does policy make my butt look big? And my staff all knew to say, yes.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
I love the
yes,
things.
Yes, yeah. It does. Yeah.
But you always had, you were the place that you had some wine, you had parties there.
Yeah,
you...
the keeper of the adult beverages in the NASA headquarters building.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like
so,
it.
So, you know, I would get a text, we're having a terrible meeting, we need your help. And what that meant was bring a bottle of wine, a stack of red Solo cups. So...
Because sometimes that's how it is.
Because sometimes, and you know, so there'd be like, you know, 8 people, 10 people, whatever in the meeting. And I'd bang on the door and I'd say, this is a meeting intervention. And everybody would look so scared. And then I'd pull out the bottle of wine and I'd uncork it and everyone would laugh. And we'd sit and we'd talk for 2 minutes and everybody would have a tiny little sip.
Yeah.
And then I'd gather everything up and then I'd go back to my office. And sometimes that is just what they needed to sort of break the ice and be able to get back and, you know, stop being dug in. I do remember one other time, too, I showed up in my boss's office with a bottle of Perrier water in a big green glass bottle. And I sat down and he looked so crestfallen. And I said, Rick, what's the matter? And he said, I was really hoping that was wine. I said, well, it can be. And so I went back to my office, got a whole bottle of wine, and then sat down with him to do my performance review. Oh, so, yes.
Best performance review ever.
Now, I will say, I have to say, in just so they're all clear, in the NASA headquarters building, there are no rockets, there are no engines, there are no dangerous chemicals, no liquid nitrogen. Fair.
And these are some brilliant people who take this very, very seriously, but I just love that she created an environment.
I think you have to have that, and the closest thing I have to that is I did once when I interviewed for it was right out of law school, and I'd done an internship at the Arms Control Association in D.C., and I was interviewing at a place called Teal Group, which was Competitive Intelligence, Defense and Aerospace, mm-hmm. Competitive Intelligence, and I was told by the person that ran my intern thing that I needed to bring, just listen to what the guy said. And I said, "What do I need to do?" And he's like, don't wear any suits. He's like, we're not. And I'm like, I'm a lawyer. I have like 6 suits designed for interviews, kind of a thing. And he's like, and yeah, just bring a 6-pack. And I just, and I was like, I don't know what to do with that. And she goes, oh, Anchor Steam. He likes Anchor Steam. Bring him a 6-pack of Anchor Steam. And I walked in like khakis, and I was like, this. And I looked up, and I'm like, this is so much. This is the mistake. This is a mistake. He goes, oh my God, you did it. He goes, okay. And I had the job by the end of the interview, but it was this thing of like, are you going to be too serious for this office? Are you going to be? And I tell my students this all the time, and I teach it at GW Law School. We have really serious jobs. You have to step away. And it's part of, you know, we jokingly say it's part of self-care, but you've got to step away and clear your head sometime. And that's a perfect thing.
Perfect example of being able to do this. Well, Jerry, you have had some. So my first party with Jerry was Bollywood.
Oh.
And so I owned a restaurant up in Silver Spring, and Jerry was just down the road, and I got invited to the Bollywood one. And that was when I met all the women friends, and it was fabulous. And Jerry was also an opera singer, which we have not mentioned here. Oh. And I do have the picture of you singing, coming down. Was that the Titanic one?
That was the Titanic.
Right. So we also did a Titanic one, which was beyond fabulous. I got to dress up and in the Oscar de la Renta dress and be served because I normally the other way around. We did the Bolshoi Ballet, live viewing of the Bolshoi Ballet at a movie theater in Newport, which was amazing. But Jerry, I mean, there's so many. And then there was the turducken, right?
Yeah, the Totally Tubered turducken Christmas.
Which was amazing. So Jerry, talk a little bit about how you became, like, these events. I was so honored. Like, I knew when I got into the Bollywood, I was like, I'm in with the women friends. It was so amazing. She ground all of her own, what was it, 24 different spices to make?
I don't remember,
curry.
But it was a lot. I did all of the spice.
Yeah. So tell us how you came up with these ideas and how kind of the food and the drink and the company all came together. Like, how do you keep a party theme like that? How do you invite the people? She would make a, I mean, we would wear like, what are we wearing? Like, we would come in dressed up, but it was also casual and fun. At the same time, it was so on point and theme down to the dishware and the glasses and all that sort of stuff.
So this was one of my big hobbies. And what I would do is the last Sunday before Christmas, round about the time the mall closed, I would have a dinner party for my friends. And the idea was that they would be able to go, and this was, you know, before we bought everything online, but I would plan this dinner party and I would invite people and they would go off and do whatever it was they needed to do. And then they'd swing by my house and we'd sit down and we'd have a really big dinner together. And what I wanted to do was make things that you can't get anywhere else.
Oh, she succeeded.
Yes. So beef Wellington. That was the year I made everybody wear cocktail dresses and big rubber rain boots.
I was not in that yet. That was prior to me.
Put your willies then, on.
The first one was How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and I made a Who roast beef. So I got an entire prime 8-rib prime rib. It barely fit in my oven. And this thing was enormous. And oh gosh, this was at least 15 years ago. And I'm pretty sure I paid more than $500 for it. And I roasted it up in the oven. And then I stood in the kitchen and sliced off big slices like they do in the cartoon. And I played the music and everybody came by with their plates.
I mean, when I say there's a theme, there is a theme.
I like it.
But then I settled on mostly countries or, you know, places, because that made it easier to pick a menu.
It sets the theme for everything. Yes.
Yeah. And I would work on it all year long. I would go to thrift stores. I would go to Goodwill. I would, like, collect dishes and things. And a lot of those dishes are now here at Beauty.
Yes.
At Beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would plan the whole thing out and announce the theme. Everybody knew it was the Sunday before Christmas. They would block off their calendars. And I was never worried about being successful. I was more about the doing of it. I would practice the recipes so that I knew how to make them. And then however it turned out on the day, that's how I planned it.
You can't even imagine. I mean, it was the, no. I think I helped. I remember when I was helping with the Titanic one because Jerry had bought the, what was the book? The Last Dinner on the
Last
Titanic.
Last Dinner on the Titanic. It's a cookbook.
And we had gotten, was it oysters or clams? I can't remember.
Oysters and scallops.
Right. And they had something in it. And I had, it had little, these little crabs. And I had to text
it was the oysters.
Yeah. I had to text my seafood rep and be like, what are these things? We have a party. Can we serve these and eat them? Basically nothing. But everything was a theme. And you planned from the cocktails when we would go in to the wine pairings. Yep. It was some of the, Jerry really knew how to pair people, pair food, pair drinks with food, always really spectacular.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
that's great. I think like the pairing of people, and this is I've never gone to that extent. I have an annual Christmas party.
You do,
which is coming up. The Rat Packs. We were on year for like 2020 would have been the 20th anniversary.
Oh wow!
And then that didn't happen, and so we're a little bit off on that. So now I just say the annual Rat Pack Swinging Christmas Party, and it started before any of us were successful, had any kind of money at all. And it was just whatever we had. But I would have like a signature cocktail. And like the first year it was like mojitos. And it was so much fun, but also the biggest mess ever. Mojitos are very labor intensive.
Yes, they are.
To make correctly. I mean, I had sugar cane. I had the whole thing to do it. And it was a lot. So then I eventually then it was like a pomegranate martini one year, like all these different things, because very Rat Pack. And then at one point I was like, you know what? Pomegranate martini stains hardwood floors. So here's what we're going to do. And I have the cocktails available, but it's like, it's champagne and wine. Basically it's champagne and wine every single year. And the other thing, beer, people bring other things. But it has grown and it's over 2 decades. But I think the most successful part of that party is the people that you choose. And I always kind of followed the Johnny Versace rule of, I want to put Anna Wintour next to a professional footballer and see the conversation that happens. If I know somebody and they're cool, like, I'm going to put them in. And so this group of people, and I had actors that I worked with, I had people from the Washington Opera. I was a lawyer for the Washington Opera for a while. I did some things for that.
You guys are also connected through, like, Keegan and...
Keegan Theater, all that stuff. I could help Keegan Theater, so, like, all the different actors. Then I would have people from the law, people from the arms control, so, like, all these, like, different groups of people, nonprofits that I'd worked with. I went through Leadership Arlington. Like, those people come, like, all this different mix of people. But it was the people that I would be like, yes, you, come. Come to the party. And the second thing that we did is we've done it as, and we're doing it again this year, is I do it as a food drive. I've done it for many things. And what I found is, like, people want to help and they don't know how.
Yeah.
And I live across the street from this historic church in Green Valley. And we've helped them every year. And, like, people get so pumped up and excited about it.
Yeah.
That they bring things in. And the next year, the first year that we did it with the church, they were like, what is the name of your organization? And I was like, it's just my friends. It's just my friends. They love it. And, like, bring everything in that night, like, go to the party, and then we go from there. I did one Christmas dinner, and I do love, like, we did dinners during the pandemic because I started having panic attacks, and I'm like, I miss restaurants so much.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, my group felt like, we can all cook, so I'm like, we planned, like, a 5-course dinner in 30 minutes one time. Then we did Spain, then we did Greece, and then we did, like, all these different things. But there's an art to it, and I think it's being true to yourself. And knowing the people that you're like, I can hang out with you for certain things, but it's probably not going to be at the party, you know. But how do you do that? Like, how do you? What's your elixir on how you put together the guest list?
Well, a lot of it has to do with. Well, first of all, there is a core group,
mm-hmm.
And so the core group is always invited.
And their core group also travels on the seminal birthdays, fives and zeros.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And they go, which I was fortunate.
That's why we did Iceland.
So I was fortunate to do that with Jerry. Yeah. But basically on the seminal ones, the host or the birthday person gets the place.
I have the same thing.
Everybody brings everything else.
Labor Day weekend wine group.
Yeah, that's right.
That goes out to the wineries.
Right.
Yeah. So your core group is always there.
So the core group is always there. And then there's, I have more groups of friends than just that particular group. You know, so I have I consider Xena, Mary, Marty, Kathy, the people who were in Iceland as a group of friends.
I came in a little later. I was so happy. Made me so pleased.
And then usually there are some people who are important to my life in the moment.
Right.
And so they get invited. Like, to the Titanic, I invited my personal trainer.
Yeah.
And
my trainer has been to several of my parties.
Yeah. And I invited my voice teacher and her
husband. Oh, yeah. That was great. And then you sang opera at the end of it,
I sang mid.
Oh, it was
amazing. I was very early on in singing at that point. I feel like that was a super brave thing for me to do. And so it kind of works its way like that. But not everybody is comfortable coming to every kind of party.
I'm going to be there in the happier camper named Lemon Twist.
So, also, sometimes it is limited by space.
By space, yeah.
And so I have learned people don't decline my invitations, so I have to be careful about how many I invite.
Right.
So, you know, it's not one of this, well, I know 10% of the people are going to say no. No one ever says no.
Because they're that one.
When I had 60 people in my apartment.
Oh, yeah. See,
that was a thing.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There might have been swing dancing at 3 a.m. I'm not sure. The actors were all there.
Well, just the number of glasses that you need and the ice.
Yes.
And I mean, it comes down.
Yes.
For the Titanic dinner, it was 20 people, 11 courses. I needed 220 plates.
It was insane.
Yeah.
And delicious.
And that's what I'm like. You set your wine glass down, you're going to lose it. So don't, at my party, I'm like, don't do that. Like, because you don't have the space. I love that. I want to transition to... the solo travel.
Yes.
With you, because this is something that I love, and that's something that I have been working on myself about doing, because when I was younger, it was very much, I need somebody to go with me to do that. But I've had experiences, even when I was younger, where it was a business trip, and I was in London, and they all left, and it was like, well, I could sit in my hotel room, or I could go out and find all these amazing places in London. And because I chose the second one, London's still my favorite city in the world.
Well, your solo travel, as we segue into it, is not just solo because Jerry sold everything and started this travel.
Yeah.
So before Happier Camper, this is kind of your transitional year-ish,
yes.
9 months, something, whatever it'll turn out to be, into fully solo travel where you don't actually come back. It's part of the lifestyle. So maybe talk a little bit about how you made, I remember when we talked about it, that mental change and what you're doing now.
So when I decided to do this, first of all, I am having the camper built for me, and I knew there was a long lead time on that. And I could have bought, they did have one they offered to me that was popping out of production sooner, but it didn't have all the features I wanted. And I thought, I'm really going to live in this thing. It really needs, I really wanted to go all in.
And it is called the Happier Camper, right?
It's called the Happier Camper.
Yeah,
right.
So, you know, I knew that there would be a long build time. And they were very clear about that up front. So I'm
and
still
made in the USA, by the way.
Made in California. Yep. Yes. And so then I thought, well, what do I do during this transition time when I'm waiting for the camper to be delivered? Because it becomes much more clear after the camper arrives, I think. So I decided to go to Canada. And I went to Nova Scotia for a month, and then I went to Newfoundland for a month, and it was amazing. And I stayed in Airbnbs because I'm traveling with a dog, and that's very, very easy, and you can do everything online. At one point, I got evacuated because of the wildfires.
Oh, yeah.
So in the middle of the night on a Saturday, I had to like redo all of my travel arrangements for the rest of my trip. But I could do that through Airbnb online in the middle of the night. Right. So technology has gotten to the point, the technology in my car, the travel technology has gotten to the point where these things are much easier than they used to be.
How long would you stay in each space?
It depended. Some places I stayed for a few weeks, I think the longest I stayed anywhere was 15 or 16 days. And some places I stayed one night because I was on my way to someplace else.
Gotcha.
I also don't like to drive many hours in a day. And with the dog, you got to stop every hour or two anyway. And then you got to stop for lunch. So it takes a long time to get from place to place. And there was no point in rushing.
Right.
You know, it's not like I was going on a 2-week vacation. I had to get to where I was going. I mean, I had
100%
to show up at
all
the,
about the journey.
I had to show up at the ferry on time and ride in, 7 hours on the ferry. But it was, I could take more time than in previous iterations of my life.
Yeah. How did you have a? And I know one of the things that Jerry loved to do when we would travel together, it was always toast from room service on the first day of whatever vacation we did. It was the splurge. But did you have some like rituals, and how did you find places that you could become, quote, like a local in, like your local watering hole when you were traveling?
So a lot of the places I went in Canada were super tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody shows up and they're clearly not from there because everybody who lives there knows everybody else who lives
kind
there.
Kind of the popular person, like, hey, what's going on?
So people would want to, because I would be in these really very obscure places, and people would be like, so what brings you here? I mean, the Canadians, they're very curious about the idea that I'm traveling solo with a dog. They're like, oh. And so they would ask a lot of questions about that, especially other women.
Mm-hmm.
And in Canada, pretty much all the restaurants they look a lot like Beauty. They're in a house. It's the first floor of the house. It's someone's mother, aunt, sister, cousin, or grandmother who is making hot turkey sandwiches and fish and chips. And it's either licensed, which means they have liquor, or it's not, which means they don't.
Another life lesson there.
Yes. I drove around for the longest time, and it would say licensed cafe. I'm like, well, what's an unlicensed cafe? It took me forever to figure out that meant they had, wine. So I headed straight for the licensed cafes and had a turkey sandwich and a glass of white wine. Well, those ladies, they like them some good white wine. So it was, I had some pretty reasonable, house white wines while I was traveling around eating hot turkey sandwiches. So it was just, I don't know, I didn't find it difficult or challenging. Mm-hmm. I wasn't lonely.
Any safety words for people who are doing this, especially if you're in a bar, alone sitting at the bar in a place that you're not that familiar with?
Well, I do think making sure that you befriend your wait staff or the bartender. Yeah. Tell them your story a little bit. So that if you were to have some concerns, you would have someone you could turn to. But I did not experience that. There was only one place where I thought, I'm not sure I feel entirely comfortable here. And I was only there for two nights. So the second...
The restaurant, the bar, those places?
No, the place I was staying.
The place you were staying. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a long drive the next day anyway. So I just got up really early and left really early.
And when you go into a bar where you don't know, you don't know anything, right? Because you said you're just traveling. What do you do? Do you get like a cocktail and then like think about it and then get some food and some wine? Do you go straight to a glass of wine? Like, what are your sitting alone rituals look like? And maybe circle back to where we were talking about where you sit at the bar and the times where you want to meet people. Maybe there's some times you're tired and you want to bring your book and not. How do you do that both as a traveler and as a woman?
So I tend to, I'm solo a lot. So when I go out, I tend to want to chat with the people who work in the restaurant. So I sit near the bartender, especially if it's a female bartender. I find that very easy to start up a conversation. My go-to is, if there are cocktails on offer, to drink a cocktail first and then choose something to eat and have a glass of wine. I find, and usually I choose off the appetizer menu because honestly, I just don't eat big entrees. Mm-hmm. Unless there's some reason I want to take half home and have it for lunch the next day, something like that. But I find small bites and a cocktail and then maybe a glass of wine and another small bite. It gives you a good reason to linger. Mm-hmm. An opportunity to talk about the menu. I'm always interested in, particularly if the food is unusual for some reason.
Like a local specialty
or local. Right. Well, and in Canada, you know, they have different names for all our same food.
Like, do you have an example of something?
And a lot of times, one of the funniest things was, let me think about this now. How did it go? Hash browns? Mm-hmm. How did it go?
Was it like the potato breakfast hash browns?
Yeah. Home fries were hash browns.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to remember how I went. No, hash browns, what we call home fries.
Right, which are like the thicker.
Right, were hash browns. Uh-huh. What we call French fries were home fries.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
And then the only thing they called French fries were frozen French fries.
Oh.
So home fries meant they were hand-cut Newfoundland potatoes.
Oh, that's actually helpful.
And hash browns.
Do they do wets there, or they do it with the brown gravy? Because
with the gravy and the cheese and the everything. Yeah.
Like, but the poutine, but it was like, it's just, they call them wets.
Oh, where no, we they were called
in,
it poutine.
And like a bunch of like, yeah, like.
But there were like things on the menu. I'd be so like, what's this? And they'd look at me weird, like, how do you not know what that is?
Well, what kind of glass of wine would you be drinking with some poutine? Which is, and describe that for
so
people.
So a lot of Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. There you go.
Goes cuts right through it.
Yeah.
Because poutine's very, very salty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really loaded with a lot of fat. So you want something a little lighter that's going to clean out your mouth a little bit in between.
Where were most of the wines coming from that you saw on the list? Were the American wines? Are they different now?
Oh, there was no American anything in Canada right now.
No.
Yeah, that is
everything. Oh, there were lots and lots of French wines.
Gotcha.
Makes sense.
Interestingly, some Portuguese wines.
Oh, like Albarinos.
Yeah, but lots and lots of French wine.
Gotcha.
Which I had no objection to drinking French wine.
No.
It was also very interesting because the label would tell you the sweetness level of the wine.
Oh, we love that.
Which I found very helpful. It would, if it had been scored by anyone, it would give you the score, and it would also tell you how much tariff there was on that wine.
Oh,
so of your price, you knew how much of it was tariff.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Well, now you're back for a little time frame, which I'm very excited about, so we get to hang out. Tell us a little bit about your upcoming life with the happier camper named Lemon Twist and why you named it Lemon Twist.
So my car is named Olive. It's an olive green Subaru Outback, and the camper is yellow and white. It's named Lemon Twist. You can see where I'm going with this.
Yes.
So together they make up the what I call MLS, which people from NASA will tell you means Mars Launch System, but we all know means Martini Launch System. And I am a huge gin martini lover. Have a beautiful bar cart with beautiful glassware. Love me some really good gin. And so that was kind of where I started with this. But when I started looking for a camper, one of the things that, or of the list of things, it had to be ultra lightweight so I could pull it with my Subaru Outback. It had to be very maneuverable, and this happier camper fits in a parking space. It also had to have some very high-tech features, like be solar-powered, have off-grid air conditioning, a crank-out awning. It also had to have a sense of being outdoors. So this particular camper, everything opens up and you might be sitting at your table inside the camper, but you're completely exposed to the outdoors. And it has a super swanky vintage look to it.
Yeah, it is really
like cool. An old VW bus. So I'm very excited about it.
How do you plan to stock it to be, hostess friendly?
So it has, it's modular. And what that means is it has these cubes that make up your bed and your seating area. And they're 20 by 20 by 20. So they actually hold a lot of stuff. I will always be able to serve a martini, gin, or vodka. And I love picnic wine, which is what I call rosé. With especially French and especially with a screw top, because that means it travels well. I'm very into lately snacky snacks.
Snacky snacks. Renee says that all the time. You're like very the only other person.
Snacky snacks. You're going to take
snacky snacks on the road. I've also been working on something that I call the road trip pantry.
Oh, this is perfect. So tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a combination of ingredients that fit into a very specific size container, as well as a specific size cooler. And then writing out recipes, every dish you can make from the road trip pantry. So it's kind of a long-term project to like write this road trip cookbook that everything can be made on a two-burner camping stove with a minimum amount of equipment and a minimal amount of cleanup.
Are we doing tin fish? Because I know you are the tin fish queen.
I do like tin fish, and I found one I really, really like. So yes, there is tin fish on a ramen.
Ooh. Yeah. Now, what kind of wines do you plan to stock?
So I'm going to stick with the rosés, the screw top rosés. It's just so much easier.
Do you have a plan? Like I was kind of thinking about this, and I was like, how do you tell people that you're open for hosting? How do you let people know that you're just having your own time? Like, what's your plan on how to continue your hosting while you're on the road?
Well, first of all, visiting friends, they will always be invited to come visit me in the camper, and that it's easy to do an outdoor setup on the camper by moving the modular components outside, and everything can be moved outside to create sofas and tables and cocktail tables, etc. The camper is so unique, and there are so few of them, and it is white and bright yellow. I don't think people will be able to ignore me. And people who do this are very curious about how other people are traveling around. Yeah. I suspect I will have lots and lots of people banging on the door and asking me, you know, what is this thing? Where did you get it? Can we take a look? At which point I will offer them a martini, a glass of wine, and some snacky snacks.
What they call like that first drink on me.
Yeah.
I was reading something also that I thought was a great idea. When you want people to come by, you have a string of lights that are on.
Yes, I have those already.
You have a couple of chairs that are open.
Yeah.
So you create
that environment. There's a whole culture with camping and things
there
like that.
There is a whole culture.
It's like a whole separate language And that's really awesome.
Yeah. Renee, should we do some rapid fires?
Rapid fire questions.
I mean, we didn't talk much about wine, but the whole concept of this is making it into
it
this
is all because
when you just want a glass
together.
Of something.
But yeah, but when wine brings people together and hosting is, I think, a critical part of that. And I think especially in come over October, also known as Virginia Wine Month. We have some rapid fire questions
you ready for these?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay. What I like this one. What's the bottle you'll open for a brand new friend versus an old one?
Old friend, not old wine.
Indeed.
Indeed. All friends.
And old, I should
friends.
Say, long time friend, yes. not.
So the truth of the matter is, I opened the bottle of wine for myself.
Yes. Well, see, done. Come on. I'm having this, is what I say. Like, you're free to check out the wine fridge if you want.
Exactly. So that's exactly how it works, is I'm drinking this. If you'd like something else, here's the selection.
Here's the selection. I love it. Okay. Right now, like, our, you know, incredible federal workforce is under a lot of stress right now. So let's do a little shout out to them. What's the federal work skill that secretly makes you a better hostess?
I think it's the ability to work with large and small groups of people to accomplish a common goal.
I love it.
This is something that the federal workforce excels at. Anybody out there who is looking to hire people, you cannot go wrong with a federal employee. They are used to accomplishing extraordinary things with almost no resources at all. So it's that ability to talk to people, to meet them where they are as opposed to where you are sitting, and just to gather people together.
I love it, which is perfect for wine. Yep. The most, I want to kind of change this one a little bit. I'm a big, of my generation, the Gen X, we are mixtape people. We have soundtracks for everything. I have road trip soundtracks for everything. What's the soundtrack you're putting together in your head, or have you already done it? Which pairs with which wine and which view of which sunset?
Ooh. So I only have one soundtrack that I do. It's called Before There Were Nachos, because I was born before nachos existed. And it's my favorite song from each year of my life.
Oh my gosh! Oh, I didn't know that about that. You. That's yeah, wonderful.
Well, so, okay, that's another next level unlock. I'll be doing that tonight.
Like 2 weeks from now, there will be 66 songs on the soundtrack.
Isn't that amazing?
Happy birthday!
Yeah, thank you.
I love that.
So it's more about, like, are we going to do Jerry's first decade of life? You know, where there's Frank Sinatra.
I do have a mixtape called RJG, The Early Years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or are we going to do the swinging 60s? Or are we going to do in my 20s, my 20s lined up with the 80s exactly? So that's super fun.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, like, that's great. We actually invented modern day fun.
I'm in. I'm a 5%. Okay, and this one, because I think it's very, very important, and I've had this happen. What is your emergency party grows by four people snack?
Oh. Wait, say that again?
Your emergency, the party just grew by four people snack. Snacky snack.
Oh, my.
It could be nachos.
I actually can't think of what that would
you
be.
You always have everything. She is the best hostess. When you stay there, there's even slippers.
I'm
not sure if there'll be any in the new.
I love that, but I have moments where I'm thinking,
like, literally anything. I will literally start pulling anything off the shelf and put it in a fancy bowl. So the trick is the fancy bowl.
See, Meghan Markle isn't wrong. All these people who make fun of her. She just takes it out of a bad bag and ties it and makes it look pretty. And that, to me, was about hostessing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it so is, 100%. I, you know, a can of black olives out of the can into a
crystal.
Fancy bowl.
Into a fancy yes. bowl. I think it also helps if you have, as I have, as my friends now know from my standing Friday happy hour, there's a cheese and charcuterie drawer in my refrigerator. They know where that is. They know where the basket of cutting boards are and serving trays. But also, I think choosing the right people, because I do have friends that, and I'm like, they always tell you never try a new recipe for a first thing. I do that all the time because
recipe.
I know that the people that I have over, and I'm like, you know, if this all goes terribly wrong, we can order pizza and they'll be happy with it with a really nice bottle of wine.
Yes.
I will do that.
Yeah. I do love a gigantic charcuterie board. And my friends do know that. So when they show up at my house, they bring piles of charcuterie and I have other things. And I mean, my charcuterie board is probably 2.5 feet across.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big and round, big handles. It's more like a grazing board.
Are you bringing that with you to the, on the, no?
No.
It's too heavy.
Yeah. And I got to be careful because everything has to have a dual purpose and whatnot.
Have you ever sent a glass of wine back when you were...
Once
the whole time?
In my whole life, one time in Italy, the wine arrived. We tasted it, and it was bad. And so we called the waiter over and said, this wine is is bad. It's not there's about us being, yeah, yeah, there's something actually wrong with it. And so he, you know, poured out, he tasted it, practically threw up on the floor, scooped it all away, and brought us a new one. But I would honestly only ever send something back if it was actually
bad. Bad. It was faulty wine.
Right.
Yeah. The rest of it, it's our fault, not theirs.
Well, and sure. And also, and there's a way to do it nicely. That's not, you know, and then don't run out and write 15 Yelp reviews.
No.
Absolutely.
I hate those people.
Yeah. Absolutely. We don't need more of that in the world, no, for sure.
No.
So it's, I'm also open to the idea that, well, maybe this isn't, I'm not enjoying this right now because I'm not having any food with it. Or maybe it's what well I ate early in the day.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just you know, my mood. Or just brush my teeth, yeah, or, you know, whatever. Right. So, and also open to the idea that maybe if I let this sit for a bit and I have a few swigs of it, it'll grow on me. And very, very often that is true.
That is true.
That is a great way to look at it.
What is your favorite memory of you just had an adventure, like, you know what, I'm gonna do this today, who you met, some kind of experience?
Yep. I've been coughing.
We've
too
got, it's, yeah, it's, we got tickles here.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, drink more wine.
Drink the wine. The water's just not gonna work. Yeah.
Darn it.
All right, so are you doing all right?
We
don't want to kill you. So
what was your answer?
I didn't hear the question. Oh,
what's your favorite adventure? Like, you're in a new place and you're like, I'm just going to go to this place. I don't know what it's going to be like. And you end up with an amazing experience.
In my whole life?
Yes.
Oh, well, Iceland was pretty fun when Jerry and I were with that whole crew, because at the end of Iceland, it was her birthday, and she was singing opera. We were in a hot tub. I'm answering for you because this is amazing. It was my top five, and I've been to about 80 countries. And we are being told by a friend of ours who is both an astronaut and a pilot, and yes, that would be the woman,
yes,
about how astronauts navigate by the North Star as the Aurora Borealis, I could cry, was flashing through the night, and Jerry is singing opera for her birthday. So I'm putting that on the top of my bucket list. And we had also had how many bottles of wine? How many?
Oh, I lost
we
count.
Had so much wine. At that event, we bought 24 bottles of wine, umpteen bottles of gin, and more came. So I jumped in for one of the best memories I've had with you, which probably also included boozy tea in Sweden.
Boozy tea in Sweden. Yeah. I've had so many. It's really hard to say. I would group them and say the times where we went somewhere that was truly beautiful and enjoyed an experience together with my friends. And it could be Iceland. It could be we went to some beautiful, did that dinner we had in Stockholm.
Oh, we went to a Michelin, was it two Michelin? We went to this more, and Michelin I have this restaurant picture of him shaving reindeer horn over like prawn or something.
Whatever.
And we sat at the bar and
at the
met,
tasting table.
As a matter of fact, I think that's one of the people I'm still friends with on Facebook, and I'm always like, where did I meet her? We have had some wonderful dining experiences. We also did drink in a bar called Yellowtail in was it the Bellagio that we were staying in, and the Yellowtail also served Yellowtail wine for like $12 a glass. That was 10 years ago, so we got ourselves some Sancerre. Because if I'm going to spend $12 for a Yellowtail Shard, I'm going to spend $16 for a Sancerre.
So anywhere where I've gathered with my good friends over drinks and wine can turn into a beautiful experience for me.
I love that. So, Jerry, we've got a last couple of questions for you. When you just want a glass of wine, what's in your hand?
When I just want a glass of wine, I always have that emergency bottle of rosé on hand with the screw top, so I don't even have to figure out how to open it, and I have no reservations about pouring it over ice.
I think that's fair.
I like your style.
That's more like desperation, but it tastes really, really good.
I mean, sometimes you need it. Sometimes you need it for rosé.
Yes.
What, as followers of the podcast will know, one of my last questions is always, what is your favorite Pink song?
Oh, Raise Your Glass, for sure.
Raise Your
Absolutely.
Glass.
Yeah.
All right.
And you are all wrong.
And that our last two things, Renee, remind everybody one more time how to follow us on
please.
All the places.
Yeah, please follow, like, subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. All the good places. You can follow us on rss.com. Follow us on whenyoujustwantaglassofwine.com, on Instagram at whenyoujustwantaglassofwine. But please do share this podcast And share Jerry's podcast or her Instagram, which is
Jerry
Camping Solo Over 60 or Jerry Buchholz.
There you go.
And so I have created one more toast for you this evening. This afternoon. We're not even at 4 p.m., but are you ready? May your camper always find a view, your glass find good company, and your table for one become a gathering spot when you wanted to. Here's to the hosts who make magic, the travelers who choose wonder, and the wines that we drink along the way until the next pour. Cheers.
Oh my gosh, Jeez, Nina.
I know.
She's so good at this.
Thank you for joining us today, Jerry. It was such a pleasure. Renee and I had such a great time.
Such a great
drank
time.
Drank some wonderful wines.
Michael Schaps.
Cheers. There you go.
We did it.
It was fabulous. Oh, my God, with this bottle of wine, too. It was so good. Perfect. I need more.
Perfect.